Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the April Klein Radio Show here on aprilklineradio.com. I'm your host, April Klein, and today is a very special day here and in the entire world. It is World Suicide Prevention Day, and it's a day that is near and dear to my heart as I lost my son to suicide 11 years ago. This is a day to raise awareness, fight stigma, educate, help save lives, and heal hearts. So that you know, we are not taking calls. If you are in crisis or feeling suicidal, please call 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. We are not taking calls. Joining me today for this very special event is my very good friend, Barb Hildebrand. She's my co-host for today. She lost her husband to suicide. So, Barb, thanks so much for joining me. Are you there?
Yes, hi, April. I'm here.
Hi, Barb. Thanks for joining me. I know this is a difficult day, and we want to raise awareness and fight stigma and talk about some of the things that are on our minds.
I agree. It's a very important day to reach everybody on this really all-important topic. And considering the fact that we've got close to 1 million people losing their lives to suicide each year worldwide, which is one every 40 seconds, it's of utmost importance to me. And I'm just thrilled that you allowed your forum of Blog Talk Radio for the call today. So thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And actually, this is my fourth year in a row doing a suicide awareness prevention show because I lost my son in August of 2000. And obviously, I want to spare other parents and other people who lose loved ones to suicide. I want to spare them the pain and do anything I can to help them. So, and I know that you're so active on Facebook and Twitter with awareness and prevention. Do you want to just talk a little bit about your situation?
Sure. I lost my husband also in the year 2000 at December, actually, at Christmas time. And so prior to that, suicide had never really been much on my mind. I hadn't known anyone. I did have a girlfriend who had lost her brother, but she rarely spoke about it. It was just too emotional and upsetting for her. But I was aware of it, so this was my first experience. And it's an experience, basically, that nobody can prepare you for. The emotions that come forward, the shock, the overwhelm, the big question of why is just all-consuming for a new survivor. And at the time, back in 2000, I knew nothing about suicide, nor was I aware of any groups for support and some of the survivor of suicide groups and so forth. So I basically just had to get back to business on my own, and I had a 9.5-year-old son. So it was a whole new world after spending close to 30 years with my husband, Rob, and just set me on a totally different trajectory than I had been expecting.
Yeah, I remember those early days, you know, back in 2000, where we didn't have social media, we didn't have Facebook. We were talking, you and I were talking about how it might have been a little. We certainly would have had more support if we had had Facebook back in those days. Don't you think?
Oh, definitely. It's absolutely remarkable what is out there for information and for support. And you see many, many people taking advantage and just pouring their souls out. They're in such incredible pain that it's actually, as far as I'm concerned, it's a gift with social media that people can reach out from across anywhere in the world and be in touch and say a kind word and just help somebody cope a little bit better.
Yeah, I agree. And I know that, you know, you and I have the fan page on Facebook, World Suicide Awareness. And what is our fan page?
It's been changed. That's why the confusion. We've got World Suicide Prevention Day radio show is our event page, and it's
our
World Suicide Prevention Awareness Show that we're doing.
That's right. We changed it to awareness show because suicide and prevention and awareness show, radio show, because there are so many other people who are actively participating today in getting the word out to raise awareness and prevention. So there was some confusion with graphics and names and things, and so we decided to change things a little bit, but we're on track with that. I just want to give out that my fan page is for my radio show is April Klein Radio, and you just set up a fan page for this passionate work that you do with suicide prevention. Why don't you go ahead and mention that?
Yes, I've been procrastinating. I do a lot of posts on Facebook under my personal profile on suicide awareness, prevention, mental illness, and so finally this prompted me to create a new fan page just this past Thursday, and it's facebook.com/suicideshatters, S-H-A-T-T-E-R-S, and that's where I'll be hosting all my posts from here on in.
Yeah, and it's the perfect name because, it really, I felt so shattered when my son died. And it took me, probably a good 3 years before I could really function again. And of course, every year is, still difficult and, a challenge, especially this time of year. With Suicide Awareness Day being on September 10th, my son's birthday is September 11th. So it just all, it's all close to home for me and all hits pretty much the same time. And I do struggle at this time of year, but I feel that it's so important to be on the air and helping others and, getting the word out and creating a video and talking with other people about suicide awareness and prevention. And we're going to do just that with them. We have three great experts on today that you've lined up. Do you want to mention who they are, just real briefly?
Yes, I wanted to mention, too, today being September 10th is, of course, World Suicide Prevention Day. And uncannily for me, it was also my wedding anniversary. So it's got a very...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it was a bad day for many years, but I now look at it. I've had 11 years to more or less heal and forgive and move forward, and I look at it as a day of really coming together to raise awareness and make others aware. So it's got double meaning for me, and I'm absolutely thrilled that we've got Michelle Lynn Gust, PhD. She's the president of the American Association of Suicidology, and as far as I know, they are one of the oldest suicide prevention groups. Then we've got Mike Purcell, who's a founder of the Facebook fan page Putting a Face on Suicide, also known as PAFOS, and he has a remarkable project he does in honor of his son. And lastly, we've got Kenneth Hemrick, who is the webmaster for the International Association for Suicide Prevention, and they are one of the only international groups that I'm aware of. So we've got a great representation of people within the suicide prevention community. Four of us are survivors, and one of us is a suicide attempt survivor. So I think we offer a pretty rounded overall perspective on suicide and what's happening out there in the community.
Yeah, and Barb, I just want to give you some accolades for organizing all this. You really put your heart and soul into this, and you got these speakers for this situation today, and I'm just so grateful to you that you really, really worked so hard. I know this is your passion. You love helping others, and I'm very, very happy to be working with you on this project.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure, and as I say, the number one reason I do this is because it is such a passion for me, and I believe that when people take their personal stories and tragedies and what for have you, it really has an impact like no other on educating people about what has transpired, and there's a common bond that I have noticed right from the get-go with anybody I connect with, that there's just an understanding that they get you, you get them. There's no need for mincing words. People just open up and literally pour their souls and stories out to you, and it's all done basically because telling your story over and over again has got a very strong healing benefit to it, and most importantly, just making people aware that this is a huge issue, and not enough focus is given to it, and so many people's lives are literally shattered afterwards, and so I think it's just a phenomenal cause to get behind, and that's where my passion comes from.
Yeah, and I feel that with you, and you and I did instantly connect because we both lost our loved ones in the year 2000, and of course we had that shared pain of loss of from suicide, and really there are no words that need to even be spoken because we both know that pain, and you know, it's a club you don't want to be a member of, but when you are, you know, you want to share it with somebody who really gets it. And
yes,
that's the thing.
Yes. I just read a post from somebody, I can't remember which page it was on yesterday. She lost her husband to suicide 28 years ago. And at that time, it was really not to be spoken about. Very much shame was involved. Right. And just let's sweep this under the carpet. So in 28 years, she has yet to speak to another suicide survivor until she made her post. So that was very powerful.
Oh, my
gosh. What a burden.
Yeah, I've noticed
28.
I've noticed a lot of posts from people who have lost their father, their sister, their brother, their mother, you know, their cousin, their friend, and it just breaks my heart. You know, I see all of these posts on our fan page and on our event page in particular, where they talk about how they're still thinking about their dad, or they're still thinking about their mother or their son or their daughter, their sister or their brother. And it's just absolutely heartbreaking. It definitely, you know, I have to say that 11 years since my son died, you know, it does get better. But as you know, the pain is still there. It does improve. It's not as bad as it was, you know, 11 years ago. But it's also never going to, for me, I'll just speak for myself, for me, it's always there. And it's just a pain that is, I guess, I've just come to live with. I think that's
I think it's a different grief entirely than any other loss, and it's quite often a very complicated grief that can become consuming. So it's something definitely people need to be aware of. And the other fact is that survivors are a very high-risk group for taking their own lives as well, because they're just in such extreme grief and pain. They don't know how to cope, and that is an aspect of suicide that many are not aware of when they've lost someone, that they themselves can be at great disadvantage, as well as their loved ones as well. So it's something you really need to be aware of. And I hope today the speakers that are talking on some very important topics, such as teen suicide, military suicide, and overall what's happening out there, will benefit from our call today.
Yeah, I hope that everyone will too, because, like I said, it really does break my heart, you know, to just see these people, all of us, you know, suffering. And also, you know, let's not leave out the people who are suicidal and the suffering that they're in. I mean, we've had a lot of conversations about their pain and the people that think about attempting and the people that think about ending their lives. Yeah, we don't want them to feel any worse, but we do want to strongly encourage them to get the mental health care that they are in need of. And we want to also, again, remind everybody that if you are in crisis or feeling suicidal, to call 1-800-273-TALK, and that's 8255. So 1-800-273-8255. And, okay, I see that we have our first guest on the line here, and I'm happy to introduce her. So, Barb, I'm going to go ahead and do that. Is that okay with you?
That sounds just perfect.
Okay, let me do that. So Michelle Lynn Gust, PhD, is president of the American Association of Suicidology, and her goal is to understand and prevent suicide. AAS is a membership organization for all those involved in suicide prevention and intervention or touched by suicide. Michelle is an international author and speaker about coping with loss and change. Her first book, based on suicide of her younger sister Denise, Do They Have Bad Days in Heaven? Surviving the Loss of a Suicide of a Sibling, inspired siblings around the world in their survival after a loved one's suicide. Michelle is a suicide loss survivor and will be speaking on the issue of teen suicide today. So, Michelle, welcome to the call. This is April, and please join the call.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. And it's nice to hear Barb's voice because I've been corresponding, I don't know how long, over email and Facebook and such. So it's nice to hear the voice behind the words.
Yes, hi, Michelle. It's Barb. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
So basically what we would like to do, Michelle, is ask you to give a brief personal accounting of how suicide touched you with the loss of your sister, and just basically let our listeners understand how you got involved with suicide prevention and your own personal experience with it.
Well, I was just thinking this morning that this is not a day that would probably have any meaning to me had my sister not died 18 years ago when she was 17 and I was 21. She was 2 weeks from turning 18. And at that time, I couldn't say that it would be something I'm still doing, and I don't know that life is going to continue to take me in, you know, this direction. I don't think any of us can ever determine where we're going. But what it did do, because I was 21 when it happened, I was in a very different place than typically many of our survivors of suicide loss have lost children, and they're much older. So we don't see so many people who were young when they had such a loss who are doing many, many things in the field. But when my sister died, I had a need to do something more, and I wasn't really sure what that was, but what I did want to do since I was first grade was write, and I wanted to write fiction. So I ended up, it took a little bit of time, and I was very fortunate that someone told me along the way, said, make sure you take care of yourself first, because you can't help other people until you take care of yourself. And I think that that was really integral in my being able to do the work that I do, because we see many survivors of loss come in and they want to instantly do something. And it's like, you can't, you have to process your loss. You have to get in a place where you're able to function and, you know, you move forward, but you're not going to forget that person. That person's always with you. But for each of us, that's very different. We can't put a number on that. And, you know, I couldn't even tell you exactly where that is for any one person, because there's so many things that we just don't know about suicide grief. But so I ended up writing the book, and the book is ultimately, and the book was just like you two were talking about. There was no Facebook 18 years ago. There was no internet, really. And, you know, I didn't have access to other siblings, and that's where the book came from. So it's very incredible to watch how social media has really changed grief, and suicide grief in particular, because people are able to connect all over the world, you know, at any one time. And I think it's made a huge difference for a lot of people and will continue to do so. But it was the book that ultimately led me into all the work that I do. Typically, when somebody is bereaved, it seems to be sort of a part of the transformation that you end up working in prevention. I don't know that I necessarily do prevention as much. It really, to me, it's postvention. It's taking care of people after suicide to make sure that, because they are at higher risk, that they are okay. But I see it a little bit differently in terms of what I do. I don't necessarily, I'm not always out there talking about warning signs and risk factors, although that's part of what I do, especially as AAS president. And so my role is a little bit different than that. But I see that there are, I think what's important to me is that having gone down this road for 18 years now, that people say to me, you know, how can you get where you're at and be a happy person? And actually, people actually comment that I wear bright colored dresses. But I see that there is so much hope and in life, and we have an opportunity to get there. And so I see it as my job to help people get there.
Well, it's wonderful, and I'm sure that with the publication of your book, it opened up a whole new world to you. So thank you for doing that. I know it had a huge impact for other siblings. And today I've asked you to speak on teen suicide, which unfortunately is very much on the rise, and the children are as young as 8 and up, and it's just absolutely heartbreaking, of course, for the parents. And although I deal with a lot of suicide in what I do, it always breaks my heart a little bit more because they are so young and have yet to live their lives. So if you'd like to speak to that issue of teen suicide, we'd appreciate it.
Sure. And I'll just go on, and then if you have questions, you know, I'll try to pause here and there. I'm not going to throw out too many statistics. We can make statistics anything that we want them to be, but I think the most important one is that suicide for teens, adolescents, however you want to refer to them, if we'll just say young people between the ages of 10 and 24, it's the third top killer behind accidents and homicide. And so you look at the top three things that kill children and young people, and you have accidents, homicide, suicide. And I think that's really important to know that these are things that are not, these are not illnesses. In terms of physical illnesses, this is very different. Some things that happen to young people, you have the onset of a lot of mental illnesses at that time. You know, there are people who don't, parents aren't aware of what's going on. Schools, unfortunately, are overwhelmed. We don't necessarily have places for them to turn. I actually was a high school teacher in the years after my sister died, and I remember talking to one of the counselors, and she was actually talking about what happens after grief when someone has someone die, and she said, you know, we bring them in, we make sure they're okay, and we send them back to class. Counselors are overwhelmed with their jobs. It's not like it was, you know, maybe, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, when it seemed like they probably had a little more time on their hands. We don't have enough social workers. So we have these kids who are going through school, and there's a lot of pain, and they don't know what to do with that. Another thing that's happening is I live in New Mexico, and a woman, Joanne Sartorius, I have done a lot of workshops with Joanne. She's done a lot of work with youth around the state. And she always says, you know, we really need to teach coping skills back to elementary school. Teachers don't want to do it. They don't want to deal with it. But what nobody seems to understand, outside of the people who have experienced it or the people who are watching kids try to cope with life, is that if we don't teach them early, they're not getting the skills that we need. And that's probably my biggest piece of this, is I don't believe that people have the skills to cope. And this, you can see this all over the economy right now, because of the economy, that people, things were so good for so long, you know, people don't know how to cope. But for kids in particular, when they don't have these skills young, they don't know how to work through, you know, life is difficult. Life isn't perfect every day, and they need to know early what to do. Something, then the loss piece, as you two were talking about earlier, that's important for kids too. And when you have a loss, you don't, again, going back to, you don't always get the support, but another piece is that you don't want to be different when you're a young person. You don't want to be different than your friends, and a loss really sets you apart. We lose more middle-aged men than any other group in suicide. These kids are losing their fathers, their role models, their uncles, the list goes on and on. That's another piece that's really important. And if we're not getting them the support they need after the loss, then they're at a higher risk anyway, and that makes it more difficult. One really important piece that serves as a protective factor for young people is that connectedness to adults. If you look at the developmental assets, and that's something somebody can Google, it's the 40 developmental assets by the Search Institute. One of them is connectedness to adults. It's really important that kids be connected in some way. And when I've done talks in schools or wherever it may be to young people, I always say, you know what? And I used to say this when I was teaching too. You know, the person you may reach out to may not be your parents, and that's okay. You have to figure out who that is. It can be someone through, it could be a coach, it could be through a religious organization, it could be someone else at the school, it could be the janitor. It doesn't matter, but kids have to be connected somehow. And the many times the parents don't know what's going on. The kids have not reached out to them, but somebody has to know what's going on, and they have to know they can reach out to someone, because that can lead back to the parents too.
That's a super important point to bring up, and I think that we all think as parents that we're in tune with what our kids are doing, but so many of us can't be, and they live their lives online in a way that none of us did. So it's really an important issue, and I tell people all the time, just be really, really connected and in tune with what's going on with your child. It can save their lives.
That's right. And the whole online piece is, you know, just, it's a huge animal. It's a whole different world than any adult experienced, because that wasn't what we had. And another thing that's really important to know is that if they are starting to experience signs of any sort of mental illness, they may not even know what's going on. And, you know, suddenly they're having whatever it may be, any sort of, it could be, you know, manic, it could be depression, whatever's happening, and they're not aware of it. And that's very scary, because, again, it goes back to that you don't want to be different than anyone else. So they're trying really hard to be like everyone else, but they don't know what's going on. If we don't teach people the signs of what to look for with depression, with mental illness, and that it's okay to reach out, then they're not going to know what to do either, because they don't know what's going on.
Well, and I think a huge aspect, it was always present even when I was growing up and going to school. There was always, you know, a few bullies in the school and so forth, but they were not the majority. And it seems now with the onset of social media that online bullying is a hugely contributing factor to teen suicide as well. And I think parents really need to be aware of that.
They do. They do. There's a lot more to look out for, and our lives are crazier probably than they were any time before. And you know, it's really, what it really means is that it's important that we all take a step back and we be present in the moment with the people who are in our lives. And that can make all the difference in the world, because you have got to know what's going on. And I'm not a parent, and so I can't, you know, I don't have the personal experience as a parent, but as I watch my friends who have children who are entering their teens now, I can see it, and I can see how difficult it is to make sure that the kids are okay, that my friends are, you know, they're busy with their own lives, but they have to make sure that their lives are, you know, that their kids are, their kids are fine too.
Yes, yes. Well, I think it's important to really be as present, as you say, in their lives, and I encourage all parents to really be open and non-judgmental, and let that pattern of having open dialogue and communication, that they can approach you with whatever is going on in their lives without repercussion and without judgment. I think you're going to have a much better chance of knowing your child and teaching them some of the coping skills. And I just feel today that the young people are under such stresses that we were not having when I grew up. I'm going to be 54 this month, and so they're dealing with the same stresses that adults are, and yet emotionally they're not equipped. So it's very important to get the message out to them that it's okay to reach out and ask for help.
That's right. So absolutely agreed. And there's just so much, we have so much to do, but it goes back to that whole piece. It's about coping and connecting.
Well,
and I apologize if everybody can hear the dogs barking.
We can hear your dog barking. Michelle, this is April. I just want to thank you so much for bringing all this up, because it is just all so powerful and important. I'm sorry for the loss of your sister. We feel your pain. I appreciate your passion and appreciate your dedication with the American Association of Suicidology. And I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. I'm sure that we have all benefited by hearing what you've had to say. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Michelle. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
So Barb, it's just also touching. You know, it's interesting to hear other people's, situations. And now we're going to hear from Mike Purcell. He is the founder of the Facebook fan page Putting a Face on Suicide. That's P-A-S-O-S, Pathos, Putting a Face on Suicide, which is a personal project of Mike's done in collaboration with the American Association of Suicidology. Mike's son, 21-year-old Christopher Lee Purcell, a sailor in the U.S. Navy, died by suicide in 2008. Mike is a suicide loss survivor. Every 40 seconds, somewhere around the world, someone dies by suicide. That's 99 people every 66 seconds. Putting a Face on Suicide, P-A-S-F-O-S, is an ongoing project soliciting pictures of your loved ones who died by suicide for posters and videos used to promote suicide awareness and prevention. Mike will be speaking with us on the issue of suicide in the military, which is really, really super important as well. So, Mike, welcome to the call.
Hi, April. Thank you for having me.
Hi, glad to have you. This is Barb.
Oh, hi, Mike. It's Barb speaking.
Okay, sorry. Hi, Barb.
We're happy to have you, and Barb's going to ask you a couple of questions. Is that okay?
Sure, I'm all set.
Great.
Well, Mike, it's nice to finally hear a voice and put a voice to the person I've been dealing with, and we just get faces on Facebook, so it's nice to put a voice to the person. So thank you for attending the call. So basically, I'll ask you, too, how and why did you get involved with suicide prevention, and just briefly tell us your own personal story of loss.
Our son, Christopher, he was a sailor in the Navy. In 2008, while he was in protective custody, he was able to kill himself. His death was very preventable. Since his death, I've been very involved in raising suicide awareness, first trying to do it through the military, and then eventually working with the American Association of Suicidology with posters, and then sort of branching off on my own with the Putting a Face on Suicide project.
Yes, it's. I encourage everybody to check the page out. Mike does an incredible job. People post pictures of their loved ones with their names and their date of birth and date of passing, and it's just a really lovely community page that's highly active and offers so much support. And then these photographs are used in ways to raise even more awareness around this issue. So please check his page out, and all of the links are on our event page for all the speakers. So I highly encourage everybody listening to take a little time and check out what all these wonderful pages offer and organizations. They've got a deluge of information and can be of help. So thanks very much, Mike, and sorry for your loss. It's something a parent would never, ever imagine, and it's amazing your strength that you've gone on so quickly to do so much good. So I thank you for that.
You're welcome, Barb.
So let me ask you, how do you feel that your organization and your project helps raise awareness? Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that, and it also raises awareness around the prevention aspect of suicide as well.
Sure. The Putting a Face on Suicide project, it's really a simple concept. All we do is we collect pictures online through the Facebook page of people who have been lost to suicide, and then for each picture we get, we create their own personal tribute page, and then after we collect 99 faces, we use those 99 faces in a suicide awareness poster, and then they're also, those 99 pictures are also featured in the tribute video. Additionally, we create personalized posters exclusively featuring your loved ones to raise awareness for whatever organization or cause that you're involved with. Everything we do, it's done freely. It's done free of charge. We have a very small staff of volunteers, each who are also survivors of suicides. The statistics, suicide statistics, are pretty unremarkable. What we like to say is the faces of the people, that's what's truly amazing. The people matter so dearly. There's another unique feature of the project that I've sort of looked into it. I've never found anything like it. But we also have an exclusive military tribute album that honors those that served and died by suicide. And that's not just a U.S. thing at all. I mean, we have a Canadian service member in there as well. So, I mean, it's open to any branch of the service.
Well, it's wonderful. And today I've asked you to speak on the issue of suicide in the military. And it's shocking that more die by suicide than are killed in combat. So if you could please just address that issue on the duration of your speech, we would appreciate it.
Sure. The U.S. military has some of the best mental health programs and policies in place. Despite that, suicides have exceeded combat deaths for the past 2 years. Conservative numbers released by the Department of Veteran Affairs said that in 2010, 462 service members died in combat, where 468 died by suicide. There's other statistics, though, that you need to look at, which are pretty disturbing. It's also said that we lose 18 veterans each day to suicide just in the U.S. That's a huge number that's not factored into the 468. If you factor those statistics in, we lose nearly 7,000 of our service members each year to suicide, not 468. So it depends on who's reporting what information or what data they're collecting it from, but there's a much larger number that maybe that they're willing to publicize or publicize collectively in one report.
Now, let me ask you, Mike, you say the U.S. Military has some of the best programs in place, and yet there's obviously quite an issue going on that the vets are coming back from whatever atrocities they've been exposed to fighting to protect our countries, and it can and often does result in post-traumatic stress disorder, and 2/3 of the deaths that occur once they come home. So what do you, how do you feel about that, and what can be done to get the help that's obviously available out to the vets sooner upon their return?
There's really two points I'd like to bring up with that. And one, excuse me, is that as our troops are returning, they go through a program that's called the Warrior Transition Program. It's usually like a 2-3 or maybe a 4-day decompression time before they return stateside. Part of the Warrior Transition Program is that they have a post-deployment health assessment where the service members, I mean, can identify any physical illnesses, any mental health concerns they might have, and it's up to them to identify what their issues are. I mean, to be willing to step up and say, yes, I do have a problem there, and then once they answer the questions in that health assessment, then they're pointed to the right resources. Those post-deployment health assessments, they're done as they leave the theater, and then it's done again 30 days after they return, and the last time it's done is between 90 and 180 days after they've returned from a deployment. After that, there's no more tracking. The military doesn't track the individual service members. It's up to the service member to be active and to say what their problems are and for them to actively seek help. A big part of the problem there, though, is that the culture of the military is what prevents our troops from seeking help. It's weakness or failure is not an option. as far as the military is concerned, if you're hurt, suck it up, stop whining. I was in for 27 years, and that's the mentality I saw the first day when I joined in 1981, and I retired in 2009, and that mentality is still out there. It's not that the help isn't available, it's that people are afraid to ask for help because they don't want to be identified as being weak.
Well, and that's all part very much of the stigma that surrounds suicide, and particularly strong, I would imagine, within the military community. It can be very critical to your career and advancement, so many of those that truly do need and deserve the help are fearful for reaching out and being isolated and stigmatized.
Sure, that's it's an extremely deep-rooted stigma. I mean, it's ingrained on the new recruits from the first day that they join the service. It's sort of unknowingly passed from one military generation to the next. It's not something that's done consciously. It's just part of that culture. It's a strong culture that doesn't readily accept weak people or people that need help. The other aspect I wanted to bring up, I mean, first was the service member. They have a certain responsibility for their own mental health. But if you're a service member having mental health issues, I mean, you're certainly not going to have your own best interest at heart. You're not really going to be cognizant of what's going on. So the other extremely important part is for the families of the returning service members, for the families to be aware of what programs are available, of what the warning signs of PTSD might be. I mean, warning signs of a suicidal person. If the families aren't looking out for the service member and not knowing what to look out for, I mean, that's a huge part of the problem. And there's really a whole wealth of resources for the families that maybe the families aren't all that aware of. I returned from Baghdad in 2008. I was there for 6 months, and my family didn't really know what warning signs of suicide were, what benefits or anything that we'd be entitled to. There's a web page that's extremely important for the families where they need to look, because I mean the military isn't reaching out to the families telling them what they need to be looking out for. So the families need to go and find these resources. The Veterans Administration's website. It's www.va.gov. If you go to that link, on the bottom right-hand corner, there's a link that says special program or special programs. You click that link, and you can click returning service members, OEF, OIF, and then click again, and you'll see family support. So from there, there's just a ton of resources that are available to the family, so they can be aware of what to expect or what maybe some of the problems might be as their service members are coming back.
Well, thank you for that link, Mike. If you wouldn't mind, could you post that on our event page afterwards? And I think anybody that is in the military would be highly interested in learning more. And also, please, everybody, don't forget to check Mike's page out. And he is the only one I've ever seen that does the military tribute, and it's done the same way as all the other project is done. But there's nothing, when you see the pages on the posters, it's just such a hugely visual impact as to how many wonderfully beautiful people are gone and lost to suicide. Many of the photos are of them when they're smiling, and it's just so unbelievably hard to understand how they can be gone. So I really encourage everybody to please check out Mike's site and Mike, I can't thank you enough for contributing today, and I hope that you've helped some people learn a little something about the military that they were very, very unaware of, probably, and these men and women put themselves in harm's way to protect all of our countries, and they really don't get enough recognition, and they need the help when they get home, so I'm glad you participated.
Thank you, Barb, and thank you for having me.
And Mike, I want to applaud you for coming on the air. I know this is, always a difficult topic, but I really appreciate you coming on, and I am so sorry for the loss of your son. So thank you, and please carry on with putting a face on suicide. Really doing a good job there. Thank you.
Thank you, April. And sorry for your loss of your son, Daniel, as well.
Thank you very much.
You're
well, Barb, boy, we've had two wonderful guests on, and our third has joined us, and so I'm going to go ahead and introduce him. Kenneth Hemrick is a webmaster for the International Association for Suicide Prevention. IASP was established in 1960 in Vienna and is dedicated to preventing suicidal behavior, alleviating its effects, providing a forum for academics, mental health professionals, crisis workers, volunteers, and suicide survivors. Kenneth is a trained interdisciplinary fine artist who in the late 90s was shocked to discover people encouraging others to commit suicide. In 1998, he created Suicide Prevention Help, which includes the Friendship Letter, where he describes how he came to see suicidal thoughts and feelings realistically. Over 25 years ago, Kenneth attempted to take his own life, so he is also an attempt survivor and offers a different perspective and insight. So, Kenneth, this is April Klein. Please welcome to the call.
Well, thank you for having me, April.
Thanks for joining us.
Quite a remarkable show up to this point. I hope I can follow these great acts, as they say.
Well, you'll do great. And this is Barb. Let me introduce you to Barb.
Hello, Barb.
Welcome, Kenneth. It's lovely to hear a voice with the person I've been communicating with all these years. So thank you so much for taking time out. I know IASP is very active and busy today on World Suicide Prevention Day. So we really, really appreciate you participating and helping others learn more about suicide.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. Kenneth, I'll ask you what I've basically been asking the other speakers. If you could just briefly tell us your own personal story of how you were touched by suicide and how it resulted in you getting involved with suicide prevention, we'd sure love to hear about it.
Oh, sure. Well, throughout my life, I was given up at birth, and I was in orphanages and foster homes and that sort of thing. And depression was a very big factor in my life. And I had felt suicidal from the time that I was six. And not all the time, but periodically, or waves of periods of time. And then around the age of 30, my marriage ended. And I just sort of had a... felt that my life was not worth living, and I took a massive overdose, and fortunately I was found and managed to stay alive, and so that had a tremendous effect on me, and it was actually through the help of a very good therapist that I was able to learn how to deal with my depressive and suicidal thoughts and feelings. But it took quite a number of years for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And just before the days of Google, I mean, I was absolutely horrified to find that people were encouraging other people to kill themselves. And I just thought that this sort of behavior was absolutely reprehensible. And I thought, well, maybe I could do something positive. So I wrote the Friendship Letter, which sort of describes how I came to see these thoughts and feelings in an appropriate way. And I was amazed at the number of responses that I got to these letters. And eventually what happened was that I was creating bookmarks of resources. So somebody would write and tell me whatever their situation is, and I would give them links to resource centers, or if they're suffering from PTSD or whatever situation, I would say, well, here, look here, look here. This is where you can get support, because in one way I felt if they're looking and they're searching and reading up about their underlying conditions or suicide prevention itself, they're not killing themselves. Or, you know, it's sort of a way to help them see that there is support, there is answers. And eventually my bookmarks developed into a web directory. And out of that, the IS heard of my work and asked me to help them with their website. And that's how I became involved with IS. And from there, we've done some quite remarkable things with our fan page. And I'm absolutely amazed you've reached your target goal. Yeah, we did. I'm just amazed at the sort of loving kindness that is displayed there by so many of the fans when people are talking about how they're hurting. So it's very good. So that's how I became involved in suicide prevention. It's not something that I actually ever thought that I would be involved with, but I felt that it was necessary to take from my experience and to do positive things with it.
Well, that's a very involved, long and complicated, painful beginnings, and I think it's just absolutely remarkable. And every person that I come into contact with that has had suicide touch their life, I'm always in awe of how they are probably some of the most strong people that I've ever come across in my life. They're resilient. They don't just sit back and let life take over. They learn as much as they possibly can, and it would appear a great many like yourself and all the other speakers on this call today. And April, we have felt compelled to make a difference and go forward and help others. So that's a wonderful benefit out of a tragedy, and really appreciate you giving us the background there.
You know, I think it's very important to talk about it, because there's so much stigma associated with it, and as you know, Michelle was talking about earlier, it's less so now, but it's really important. What you're doing is a fantastic service. When your show started, by the way, I tweeted it and posted it online, so hopefully this will be heard by many more people around the world.
Thank you.
That you're doing.
We appreciate it, and it's also available on a recording afterwards, and so anybody that wasn't able to make it live, this will stay up. The link will stay up for the recording for a long time, so people are able to get back to it and hear what great information you all are sharing. So, Kenneth, how does IASP, what would you say their biggest function is?
Well, in terms of promoting awareness about suicide prevention, World Suicide Prevention Day is the key event for the International Association for Suicide Prevention. We started it in 2003, and it's grown by leaps and bounds over the last, over the last few years. And, you know, it's not only we tend to think of the suicide prevention in our Western context, but it's a reality in different parts of the world for different reasons. And so what we try to do, first of all, is to provide awareness, and we do that very effectively as through our Facebook page. And we also have a directory of resources that for groups at risk, for those in the military, for example. And these are the best resources that we've been able to find that relate to suicide and suicide prevention. And so in terms of getting that information out, that's one way we do it, but we also work in another, at another level, and that is that we have task force and we have special interest groups. And what these groups do is they look at very specific issues relating to suicide and suicide prevention, such as like the elderly, or the genetics related to suicide, or how we certify deaths as being suicidal. And we've done some fantastic things in setting up guidelines for suicide in the media and how suicide is reported. And so there's a number of different groups that we have and task force, and you're invited to browse our website at iasp.info, and you will see a wealth of resources about suicide prevention.
Yes, I'd like to interject. If you are a member on the IASP fan page, again, the link is provided on our event page for all of our speakers. Kenneth is the webmaster and keeps a very close eye on what's going on there. It's one of the most compassionate pages for suicide prevention I've ever had the pleasure of belonging to. People post, they're suffering the angelversary of their lost loved one. Kenneth will post links that provide them with further information on how to cope. He also posts hugs, and all the members chime in and either leave a lovely comment or click the like button to show their support. So it's a highly interactive community, and people really, really support one another, as he said, in a very, very loving, non-judgmental way, and it's just absolutely warms my heart whenever I go on the page, which is daily. And they also welcome each new member by name, so it's quite an undertaking, and you're to be complimented, Kenneth.
Well, thank you. I would like to say we can, over the last couple of weeks, we've had an amazing increase of new fans, so we can't sort of welcome them right now, but I think once things calm down a bit, we can get back to that, because I think I always feel that it's important for somebody belonging to a page such as ours and the seriousness of it that they feel that they are special and genuinely loved, and they are special, and I know from the way I feel that person is genuinely loved.
Yes, very, very important. They're not just another face or another fan on the page, and that's something that your page does that I don't see occurring on any other pages, and it really does make, it just makes that difference that somebody does feel they're acknowledged and welcomed, and it just leaves you, I remember when I joined 2 years ago, it was just absolutely like, wow, thank you. You know, it's just so unusual and unexpected and lovely, and it basically shows you what kind of a page it is. So it's wonderful what you do.
Well, thank you very much. And, you know, I hope your listeners have a chance to visit our website and find tremendous number of resources. And so you'll find that very interesting to browse, and you'll spend a long time if you start getting into it. You say, oh, I didn't know that.
Well, you touched upon your guidelines and being so instrumental in getting the guidelines for the media on how they report suicide, and that's an issue that's become such concern, because people's hearts and feelings are involved, and the media will sell whatever sort of draws attention and is the big hot news story, and there's a right and wrong way, I believe, in covering death by suicide, but you can do so in a respectful, compassionate way, and I encourage everybody to check the guidelines out and take a stand if you see something, whether it be on a newspaper, website, on a call, whatever format you're exposed to, that somebody is not showing the appropriate decency, I myself contact them and let them know and take it as an opportunity to educate and hopefully cause some change. So I would ask everybody to check that guideline out as well. So, Kenneth, we're coming to the top of the hour, and I thank you so, so much for your information and being here today with us, and just can't thank you enough, and I'm so thrilled to finally hear your voice.
Same here, and thank you very much, April, and hope you
thank
have
you, Kenneth,
a,
so much.
Continued success with your show.
Thanks,
Kenneth.
We so appreciate you sharing your story. Thank you. And all your hard work and dedication with IASP. Thank you.
Thank you, once again. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Kenneth.
Take
care. Well, Barb, we really had some great speakers here today. And, you know, I hope that the people listening, you know, I've been tweeting and Facebooking while you've been interviewing, and the response so far has been tremendously positive. And I'm hoping that, you know, that these messages of encouragement really reach the hearts and souls of people who are struggling, and also those who are in the process of healing from the loss of a loved one, and that we can come together as a community and help each other through this journey. And literally, you know, through the use of social media, Facebook, Twitter, you know, hold each other's hands and hold each other up as we, you know, step through the pain. And I don't know. I just feel a real source, a real sense of bonding right now with everybody on Facebook in particular. I'm feeling a lot of love and a lot of support from them, and I hope that they feel the love and support from us. Because that's our intention.
Yes, it was quite a wonderful call, and I hope that your listeners and the people that have signed up through the event page are finding some of the information today to be new and educational, informative, and as I said before, all of the website URLs are on our event page under the speaker information, and I highly encourage everybody to check these remarkable groups out, like their fan pages and get involved and get some information. And today I just am so thrilled personally to have this opportunity to reach more than one-on-one, and I hope that everybody feels the same way on the call and that they'll share the link and for the recording, which is the Listen Live or Later link, and get the word out. And I would also like to encourage people, something that's done, I've got it for my personal profile, and something that everybody can do is at 8 o'clock your time, you light a candle by a window and just calmly close your eyes and remember your lost loved one and remember all the lives of everybody you've connected with here today, and just take a moment to really send out some peace and love and hope and get people through this. So I'm just absolutely thrilled we had the attendance we did today, and I hope we've delivered.
Yeah, I feel really good about this too, and I think that's great that you reminded everybody about the 8 p.m. wherever you are in the world, 8 p.m. today, tonight, light a candle and think about anyone that you have lost to suicide, Send some good love and wishes up to them and to their families that are still in the healing process. So, Barb, thank you so much. You have been an absolute delight and such a passionate, dedicated worker that you are. I am always in awe of you, and I'm so thrilled to be working with you. So thank you so much for joining me with this Suicide Awareness and Prevention Radio Show.
Well, thank you, April. It's absolutely my pleasure and honor, and I feel for everybody that's on this call and for anybody who has lost a loved one to suicide. My heart goes out to you all, and I hope that we can all support each other in this incredibly difficult journey of recovery, and we're doing it one person at a time, one voice at a time, and today we're doing it one call at a time, so thanks for having me.
That's fine. Oh, thank you so much,
everyone, thank you so much for listening to the World Suicide Awareness and Prevention Radio Show here on AprilKleinRadio.com. And we will be here next year for the September 10th Suicide Awareness and Prevention Radio Show as well. So until then, please go ahead and friend us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and be sure and love one another, and let's heal our hearts as we step forward. So thank you so much, everyone, for listening. This is April Klein for Barb Hildebrand. Sorry about that, Barb. I was just stuttering here a little bit. April Klein for Barb Hildebrand. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks, Barb.
Bye-bye.
Bye.